You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Trying to make sense of the world?
You've got Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach.
Call our toll-free number now.
Headlines, culture, and real conversation.
And now, our feature presentation.
Here's Pete and Greg.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach here on the Civic Media Network. You can always get in touch with us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on that live stream. We're currently streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform we still call Twitter. Still lots of great programming still ahead. We are going to be talking to, I'm trying to find his name right here. It was right there. Oh, there it is. Adam Reiner. He is a James Beard award-winning food journalist to talk about his new book on the rules, the new rules behind dining. So don't go anywhere for that. That's going to be great conversation. Plus, we'll be wrapping everything up with the nightcap tonight, where we talk about what we learned, hear from you on the text line about your thoughts on the question of the night. Oh, speaking of the question of the night, let's restate that.
Let's talk about the question.
Okay, question.
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 Pregunta.
Question.
Question.
Hey, I have a question.
Questions.
This question.
Domanda.
Question.
Question.
Questions.
It's National Crouton Day. What is your favorite salad topping? That's right. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream. You can also get in touch with us via the Civic Media app. You can also give us an email, too, if you'd like. Nightlight, N-I-T-E-L-I-T-E, at civicmedia.us. And I'm remiss. I'm sorry, guys. I'm so sorry, gentlemen. I apologize right now. I didn't introduce you properly. That's just, that's poor everything.
I was going to say something.
I know. I apologize. I'm so sorry. Let's take a moment. Let's take a moment. They love radio silence here. But I'm coming to you live from Radio Park in Racine. That's in southeastern Wisconsin. And up the coast in northeastern Wisconsin is Mr. Pete Schwabba, a.k.a. Chris, the mayor of Christmas City, USA. Not Marinette. He's the mayor of Christmas City, USA.
Enough.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you get the top hat on with the little holly on the side.
If the name change ever takes, I'll take that.
And then all the way over in Madison at HQ here at Civic Media is Mr. Dom Lee. We are the Yotter Hay Triangle here for you, having some good time with the question of the night, which is, what is your favorite salad topping? And I like, and I said this before, and I like that you said salad topping, not salad dressing, because I feel like that just limits your choices.
Totally.
My wife does not do salad dressing at all. It is.
Wow.
No, not on the side, nothing. Just, she just likes a good old fashioned pile of vegetables. Or as Ron Swanson would put it, this is food my food eats.
I never heard that. That's funny.
So
First of all, I want to say one time I was in a restaurant and I laughed hard. It was this older couple. It was a supper club probably 20 years ago. When the guy says, and I'd like some extra croutons. He called croutons croutons.
I love me some croutons.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love stale bread?
He rocked it. Yeah, exactly.
There you go. What about you, Pete? What is your favorite salad topping?
I'm going to come out guns a-blazing here, Greg, and I'm going to say red onion,
oh boy,
blue cheese, and French dressing, and with some bacon bits, too. I forgot to add the bacon bits, but I love that whole concoction. It's dynamite. And here's a little shout-out to Supper Club dressing, too. Have you ever heard of peppercorn ranch?
Of course I have.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah.
And not every place has it, though. It seems like mostly it's just supper clubs. But those are my toppings, and I love a salad with all of the above on them.
It's funny because a few years ago, I used to go to salad bars all the time, buffets, and they would always have the salad bar, even if it was like a Chinese buffet, Italian buffet, Jimmy John's buffet. That's an Italian joke right there. They always have a salad bar, whether it's a small salad bar, but they would always have French dressing. And I swear to God, I was like, did we all just forget about French dressing? Because no one ever brings, like, when you talk about dressings, it's ranch, Thousand Island, it's
oil, really, and vinegar, those, Italian.
But no one ever says, would you like French?
Not to be confused with Western. They both kind of look alike. So if you're at a salad bar and they just have, like, both of them, then they're not labeled, you could get yourself in a world of trouble there.
I feel like Western's a little more orangish Whereas okay. French is has a little more dark hue to the liquid, if you will. So just something that those are the weird things that pop up into my head for no reason whatsoever. I'm just like, what happened to French dressing? But
maybe,
that's for
maybe our guest could clarify that for us.
Greg. Oh, I would love to see Adam a James Beard award winning writer be asked the question. What do you think about French? You think it gets the shaft? Huh?
What's your favorite kind of ranch on your croutons?
Do you like garlic ranch or ranch ranch? Do you like a spicy ranch? Dom, what about you? Do you like to dunk your ranch in your pizza?
I gotta steal Pete's Western dressing. I do like Western dressing. I really do. And Pete, you said bacon bites. I love.
Well, I like the bacon bites with blue cheese, red onion, and French. Actually,
okay.
I work with
for
ranch,
me. It's just
or with Western.
I just like the bacon bites. I really do. I also liked hard boiled eggs as well, sliced. Those are really really good. Oh man,
those are very tasty too. Yeah. Okay. I went to last year. I went to Butternut for some shows on the old program, and we went to it wasn't a supper club. It had supper club vibe, but it was a restaurant with a bar in there. But they had an old school, old like small, you know, salad bar. It was maybe like Beautiful. 6 feet long. It was not big in choices, but it had all of the greatest hits. You know, you had your iceberg lettuce, you had your shredded carrots. Your shredded cheese, your cottage cheese, your sliced eggs, your red onions, and then and there were other things too, like of course sunflower seeds, croutons, and all sorts of things like that. And then of course, just half of the whole cart was dressings, I was sitting there going, "What do I do? What do I go?" And I went with Thousand Island. Could not stop myself. Love
Thousand
that.
Islands. Good stuff. I mean, and sometimes those salad bars, you go there, like at a supper club, and if it's later in the evening, it looks like a crime scene. Like nobody's putting the right things back in the right, you know.
Yep. Yeah. But, I just because it's called a sneeze guard doesn't mean you have to sneeze on the sneeze guard, folks. Take a hanky with you. I'm just saying. That may
they
be tied
out
to
a favor during COVID, Greg. Remember, they shut down all the salad bars, and now we've only got one here in Marinette.
As opposed to how many before?
Well, we have a Jack's franchise, and they're outstanding. There's three of them in the Twin City area, Menominee, Michigan, across the river. Mm-hmm. But only one of them reopened the salad bar, and it's a very good salad bar. But
I miss Wendy's salad bar. Wendy's used to have an amazing salad bar.
Did they?
But they had a full-blown salad bar. It was fantastic. And it was like an extra $2. Or you got one trip. One trip. Okay.
Who's policing that?
I don't know. I think they work for the Watertown School Board now. Ho!
Hi-yo!
That reminds me, if you missed the first hour, go to civicmedia.us/shows. Yes. Look for Nightlight and download episodes. Catch up. They're all right there, cataloged, choreographed, and curated for you. In other words, to begin with the letter C. Dom, what do we have on the text line regarding tonight's question?
We got quite a few. We got Monica from Mount Horeb coming in hot, saying sliced black olives in place of dressing. Adds a little moisture and a lot of flavor.
Okay.
I agree.
I get down on black olives. I love it on pizza and salad. I wouldn't do it in place of dressing, but hey, I don't hate that, Monica.
They can be overwhelming, though, the black olives. If you like them, they're great.
Oh, I love black olives. Okay.
They can kind of take over.
They're so good.
What else we got?
We got Brett from Brown Deer saying, my favorite salad topping is psychedelic mushrooms. They taste
you really
got to
proofread these.
But for the next 6 hours after dinner, it's a lot of fun. Very true.
Especially Thanksgiving.
He has very enjoyable evenings.
Yeah,
absolutely. We got Jack from Merrimack saying, my first real girlfriend taught me how wonderful salads can be. My mom's idea of salad was iceberg lettuce, a few chopped carrots, sour vinegar, and oil dressing. I've learned to have at least a half dozen different ingredients like butter lettuce. I've never even heard of that. Salted
butter lettuce?
I don't know.
I think it's like an iceberg type.
It sounds good, though. Salted sesame seeds and a sweet tomato and red onion dressing. Favorite ingredient, Parmesan and garlic croutons are great, but there's nothing better than dried cranberries.
Oh, see, that's where you lost me at cranberries. I don't really like mixing sweet into my salads. No, thank you.
Really? You don't like the occasional strawberry or blueberry in there with some cheese or something?
No, thank you.
That butter lettuce sounds good, though. I love butter.
I will always go for spinach. If the salad bar has spinach, I always go for the spinach or like a leafier, greener green than iceberg. But yeah, I yep.
You got to put some green in there, even if it's just, that's where all the nutrients
just
are.
Just like green peppers. If it does. Any other text messages there, Dom?
Yeah, we got a few more. We got John in Madison saying, I always add cherry tomatoes, red cabbage, whole black olives, feta cheese, and carrot slices. My new favorite add-on is sliced hard-boiled egg. And he still loves Western dressing as he did as a kid.
I think you got a salad buddy right there, Dom.
Oh, man. Thanks, John.
Let's get together and go for some salads, fellas.
Come on.
We went to high school.
Salads over here.
Every Wednesday we go for salads.
Tacos on Tuesday, salads on Wednesday.
And we also have John saying, great first guest tonight. Definitely.
Thank you very much, John. We love the museum. They're great. They're absolutely great. Do we have any other text messages or we move on to the Fache book?
We also have Nick from Marshall saying, got to have bacon bits. The hard, crunchy ones are okay, but the soft ones are the best, especially if you make your own.
Yeah.
Make your own bacon bits.
Yeah,
I guess you just make bacon, right?
And cut it up. You just make bacon and cut it up. I mean, I think the stuff you buy in the store is actually, wait for it, vegan. It's not real bacon. It's like a soy product or something, but... it still smells and tastes like.
You can make your own croutons too if you really wanted to, I suppose. Just let the loaf of bread go bad.
Can I get an extra setting of croutons, please? Thank you very much. I love hard bread. It's just delicious and just tasty. Sorry, I don't know.
I have no idea.
Great.
I liked it. It was working for you. It's the perfect voice for croutons.
I love croutons.
Boris on Facebook puts one on there I totally forgot about, and I love this on sale too. Garbanzo beans. That's a good one.
Okay. They taste like anything,
For me.
Yeah.
I mean, I like hummus too, so I think that the right dressing, like a nice creamy Italian on there with some garbanzo beans, great stuff, man. You're in flavor country.
I love
Amanda
hummus.
Nimmer, our pal, says sunflower seeds, and then she says, I must add to mine sunflower seeds, eggs, cheese, mushroom, and tomato with ranch. Ranch is in all caps. It's if we weren't going to read that or something. Thank you.
Ranch!
Sean says, hard-boiled egg and bacon bits. Another vote for hard-boiled egg and bacon bits. Okay. Brian says, black olives, and even was nice enough to include like a nice taco salad picture there in case we didn't know what black olives look like. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Brian. That's a nice, that's a lovely concoction. Go ahead, Greg.
I was saying, what I really enjoy about this is that all of these answers, whether it's ours, text line, whomever, really missing the point all of us on what a salad can do and should do, I should say. We're just like, give me a bed of iceberg lettuce and give me everything my doctor doesn't want me to eat. But on top of lettuce, it's a salad.
I think that's called a wedge salad, right? That's a dynamite tasting salad. Probably not
that
healthy for you.
To me, a wedge salad is nothing more than flatbread pizza in as much as you change the name and you charge more. It's a slice of iceberg lettuce with the exact same junk on it, and they're like, that's $17.95.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. But with the blue cheese and the crunch and the bacon, it's good stuff. I'm in flavor country right now. Teresa says black olives and sunflower seeds. All right. Our pal Mike Desitel says shredded cheese, bacon, and Thousand Island dressing. Thousand Island is so old school. I love it.
It's also very hard to like maneuver. It doesn't drip. It doesn't like flow.
True.
You have to like smack it down on the salad.
Mix it up. Yeah. Or you could buy a Big Mac and scrape it up. One more here. Scott Tom says, well, today it has to be croutons from the Olive Garden. Okay. And Daniel Francis Thine says salt. We'll read a few more of these as the show goes. Salt your salad. Okay.
Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we'll be talking to Adam Reiner. He's a James Beard Award-winning food journalist to talk about his brand new book, The New Rules of Dining Out, plus the nightcap. So don't go anywhere. We're right here on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Mach on the Civic Media Network. Stay tuned. Stay close.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
What if that was just an instrumental, Dom? We would have been sitting here for the next 20 minutes. Well-timed again. Hey, welcome back to Nightlight, ladies and gentlemen. I am Pete Schwabe coming to you live from Northeast Wisconsin, joined as always by Greg Bach coming to you live from Southeast Wisconsin, just down the lake, and Dom holding down the fort in Madison. Our question tonight is, it is National Crouton Day or Crouton Day. What is your favorite salad topping? We've had some great texts. Keep them coming. We'll read them throughout the show. Right now, It is my pleasure to welcome our next guest to the show. Adam Reiner is a James Beard award-winning food journalist and the author of The New Rules of Dining Out. He joins us now over the stream to talk restaurants and the rules of dining, which I didn't even know a lot of these existed. Adam, it is great to have you here. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate your having me. Happy crouton, National Crouton Day. There's so many of these days now, like, you know, Dirty Martini Day, Cotton Candy Day. Like, it's a little exhausting.
Oh, Adam, there's like four of them on the same day, too. Like, they just ran out of days. Like, just put it on National Crouton Day. No one cares.
Right, right. I mean, I would only imagine that there are people that probably do, like, they celebrate all the things on that one day, but it's not me. I'm not one of those people.
Excellent.
Your book is so interesting, and it got me looking at visiting restaurants totally differently. Like, I never thought, I kind of was that clueless guy who went in and he just ordered something and you ate and you left. But there is an etiquette to this, as you point out in your book. But first I want to ask you something you touched upon in your book. Why are restaurants more important now than ever?
Well, I think that a lot of the food television thing has evolved in a way that it kind of opened a window into that world. You can go all the way back, I think, probably to like Julia Child and Jacques Pepin to see, you know, where that starts to take hold. But I think around like the late 90s into the early 2000s, it kind of supercharges a little bit with the Food Network, where you have these kind of like stand and stir shows. And then after that, you have all of these like food reality television competition shows, and the stakes kind of keep getting higher and higher and higher. Meanwhile, you have the internet, which kind of democratizes food, and social media then, which kind of makes everybody, you know, gives everybody an opportunity to kind of periscope into these dining experiences, you know. And so now I feel like it's something that has become the main event more so than probably 20, 30 years ago, where people would, you know, do dinner in a show. Now dinner is the show, which, you know, I think when I think about working in a restaurant, And I think this hopefully is to your point. And when you're taking care of people in a restaurant, now you're not taking care of just people who like humbly walk in. You're taking care of people who really think that they have certain degree of expertise about this, even though they may very well not. So that, you know, that makes life a lot more difficult for people that wait tables, because, you know, people will have this thing like, oh, well, what makes the black spaghetti black? Is it squid ink? You know, and you have to sort of play along with that in a way where you kind of make people feel good. But, you know, it takes a lot out of you. It's a big, you know, it can be exhausting at times.
And that's something you talk about in the book, too, is that you have a history. You're a writer, but you were a waiter. And I imagine that you have a lot of stories from, you know, from the very cool to the very like, you know, sitting in the behind the restaurant going, why do I still work here? These people are insane. I mean, how does your history as a server inform the writing you do now, and as far as the book and when you talk to people about this topic?
First of all, I consider myself a restaurant guy more than I consider myself a writer, no matter how like much success I have. The mentality that I bring to my writing, especially given the experiences that I've had working in restaurants, I think is what I hope distinguishes my writing from other things that you might read. You know, my first job in restaurants was in a theme restaurant in Times Square. So even though later in my career, I worked in like fine dining restaurants that were a little bit more like, you know, upscale, I still also had experiences working like serving tourists in Times Square. And you know, it does sort of shape, you know, my worldview. But I think what I learned in all of that experience is that people don't think of dining out really as a skill, you know, not in the way that they do cooking. But I think that dining out is something that you can get better at. And it's really about engagement, not so much about etiquette, even though I think I do use the word etiquette in the book. I think that my book is really about understanding better the rules of engagement, not so much like being a more polite guest, because I don't think that waiters really want you to be polite. They just want you to be compliant, and they want you to be a decent person. So you don't have to be like, thank you so much, all, you know, around every turn. Yeah. You really have to just don't be the type of person that's like, can I get the broccoli rabe instead of the mushrooms? Why can't I get that? I don't understand why, like, blah, 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 blah. They did it for me last time. You know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff where it's like, I always use the example too, like if you should always approach your dining experiences like you're walking into someone's home. You know, when would you ever walk into someone's home and they say, you know, would you take your shoes off? And you're like, no, I'm good. I'll leave them on. Like you would never do that in someone's home. So if in the restaurant they're presenting you with certain framework or rules, you should respect that and you know, understand that there was a well thought out reason why those rules are the way they are. And that applies to things like seating in complete parties and why they can't take the appetizer orders separate from the entree order. And I think some people are willing to like accept those terms and some people resist it. And it turns out, I think for them, that they have worse service experiences when they don't.
Oh, it is.
Do you have 5 hours? Oh my God.
I'm here. I'm here for the long haul, guys. I got my coffee. I'm ready to rock.
Adam Reiner is here. He is a James Beard award-winning food journalist and author of The New Rules of Dining Out. And we are going to get more into this with Adam. When we come back, I have a couple doozies I want to ask our guest, and maybe we'll make him slum it, Greg, and get his opinion on croutons. So we'll figure all that out. We are coming right back after the news with more food and restaurant talk with Adam Reiner. This is Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach and Nightlight on the Civic Media Network. Welcome back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. So great to have you with us on this Wednesday night as we talk about all the things in life that make us happy. And right now it's food and restauranting. I just made up a verb there. Our guest at the moment is Adam Reiner. He is a James Beard award-winning food journalist and author of The New Rules of Dining Out. That's right, folks. There is an etiquette to this. And Adam is here to steer us in the right direction. I have to ask you, my wife sometimes will say, like, we'll be at a pretty decent restaurant and she'll say, why don't we just split something? And if I were a waiter, that would drive me bananas. Is that okay to do?
Sure, why not? I think it depends. Like, if it depends how you're doing it, how you're asking about it. You know, I think most people that work in restaurants, they just want to make you happy. They just want you to leave happy.
Okay.
So yeah. I think that there's a little bit of a misconception about like restaurant staff. These like urban myths about, you know, how the chef is going to like taint your food if you send it back, like. In most busy restaurants, these people don't have time to like play out these grudges against you.
Yeah.
They just want you to enjoy yourself.
That's a relief.
You know? And so like, I think when it comes to sharing, like if you're okay with the food just coming with like some share plates, that's fine. When I think it becomes like overstepping is when you're like, can you plate it on two plates for me, but could you put like only the sauce on one of the plates, you know, where it's like you're being lazy. Or you expect special treatment. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that anything basic like that really bothers a server, assuming that they're not having a terrible night, as long as you ask for it in a way that's respectful.
I don't mind having all my nachos Bel Grande on one plate. That's fine.
I think that in my book, like the kind of basis of a lot of what I'm talking about is really just about communication. And that's something where I feel like it breaks down a little bit for some people in restaurants where they just don't know how to find the right language to say what they're looking for. And I think that once you work a day in a restaurant in your life, it kind of changes your whole worldview about what it takes to make that hospitality magic happen. And so for people that have never had that experience before, it's sort of understandable why they wouldn't know how to send food back. Like, you know, sending food back is a really hard thing because a lot of people, they always say the same thing. They're like, I never do this before. I've never done this before. Or I'm not that type of person. It's like, well, clearly you are that type of person, but even so, like you don't really have to preface it with apologies if you're unhappy with the experience. And that's why I think in the book, there's an entire chapter that's titled Managing Disappointing Experiences. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you know, we need to understand as restaurant guests that we can have bad experiences in great restaurants and we can have great experiences in bad restaurants. Like ultimately we are the constant variable in those situations. And we ultimately decide if we leave unhappy or not. Like even if like everything goes wrong and the plates are flying and your food hits the floor, the servers are rude or whatever, you can still enjoy your company and have a good time. I've seen this happen, like where things melt down and people just realize that, you know, it happens. one out of every 50 situations in a great restaurant might go bad. If you got that night, it stinks when it happens, mm-hmm. but it isn't the end of the world. You know, you can make the best out of it. So
yeah.
I think that going into it with the right attitude, I think, is really important too.
And that, you know, leads me to a question here about modern day in 2026. We are, you know, we are 5 years out from the world being out in the world, you know, not including the lockdown, but you know, there's a whole new attitude. We have social media, people online filming their experiences, whether they're good, bad. They want clicks. They're hoping it's bad so they can, you know, make $1 million. But what are the conversations you are hearing, Adam, with restaurant owners, servers, and even customers in a post-COVID world when it comes to the experience, attitude, and this notion folks have that I'm here, so I deserve the best. And if I don't get it, well, I will ruin you because I have the internet.
That always reminds me of the South Park episode when Cartman's an elite Yelper. Have you ever seen that?
Yes.
you know, I'm actually reporting a big story right now that's about the restaurant economy. And I can tell you just from a lot of these conversations with people, restaurant owners, operators, chefs from all over the country, things are really, really bad right now. Like, I don't understand why there's this kind of disconnect between when people go to the grocery store and they see how expensive a bag of groceries is today. And yet they go to a restaurant and when it's pricey, they sometimes can't sort of like separate those two. Mm. Like they get more upset when the restaurant is expensive than they do when basic necessities like gas and groceries are expensive. But I think that with the technology part, I just want to add that becomes an obstacle to connection in a restaurant. And so like when you're a server and you walk over to a table and greet them and say, hello, welcome to the restaurant. Thanks for coming, blah, blah, blah. And the person says, could I get your Wi-Fi password? Like that immediately kills the vibe. And it immediately sends the message to the server, like dinner is a secondary like priority mm-hmm. for you, which is a really negative thing. And I understand sometimes people want to post videos and all that stuff, but restaurants are like the ultimate analog experience, you know, like a restaurant is never going to get better by having multimedia technology going on. You know, it's the type of place where you need to set all of that stuff aside and switch it off. And when you're not doing that, then you're making life a lot harder for the people serving you. But I think that with the restaurant economy struggling right now, I feel like this is the most important time for people to really double down and be better guests than they have been in the past. These restaurants Yes. really need that support. They need you to buy a gift card, you know, during the holidays that maybe someone, it'll help to, you know, keep them busy in January and February, mm-hmm. You know, to sit down at the bar on a Monday night at 5 o'clock when they open and order a glass of wine and a pasta. Like it's those dead times early and late that are the ones that are the hardest to fill. And without a doubt, post COVID, things have changed. Dining habits have changed. Everybody's door dashing all the time. People don't stay out as late. People aren't, you've heard all the narratives, I'm sure. People aren't drinking as much alcohol because they're, you know, doing cannabis, you know, things or whatever it is. It's not helping the restaurants in terms of their sales. And then on top of that, behind the scenes, they have issues like immigration and tariffs and food costs rising and labor costs rising. So it's really kind of a perfect storm right now for restaurants that is not, it's not a healthy situation.
Boy, that's a great point. Our guest is Adam Reiner. He is a James Beard award-winning food journalist and the author of The New Rules of Dining Out. It is a great read, folks. One of our listeners, our regular listeners, also waited tables, John Murray from Madison. He wants to know if 20% is an acceptable tip in the mind of today's waiter. And he also calls you his favorite guest of all time on this show, Adam. So there you go.
I'm honored. Thank you. I think 20% is great. And, you know, I think that 18% to me is still kind of the baseline. You know, the one thing I will say about tipping is that, you know, it's really important for people to divorce the idea that tipping should be either a reward or a punishment. You should never, what we in the industry call stiff your waiter. Do not ever stiff your waiter, meaning leaving zero tip. If you had the worst experience of your life, you still should never leave zero tip. There's a whole team of people that are involved that may not have dropped the ball the way that the server that you want to punish did. So leave a proper tip, let's Great say 15%. Point. Then the following day, I recommend if you still feel like you know, aggrieved, call the restaurant, talk to the manager, send them an email, lay out the case for why you were disappointed and give them a chance to make it right. But it doesn't do any good to just like give somebody a bad tip, ruin their day, you know, hurt their income. You never know what's going on in a restaurant behind the scenes. Somebody might have gotten into an accident on the way to work, and so they were short-staffed. They could have missed a delivery. One of the a piece of equipment in the kitchen might have broken down. Like, again, this could happen one day in the 50 days that you could possibly have gone there. You just happened to go that night, and it's unfortunate, but it doesn't mean that they can't invite you back and do some nice things for you and reclaim the situation. But if you don't express it in a healthy way, you're never going to get that.
I just had this conversation at a restaurant this past weekend with some friends, and one of the people said, you know, I leave a very low tip, or I don't leave a tip, as a way to tell them what I think. And I said, yeah, that doesn't really work though, because you don't know the situation, what you just said, Adam. And also, mm-hmm. a lot of these folks are making like $2.30 an hour. So when you don't give them a tip, you're also taking away from their general livelihood. And this is how they pay their bills. There are other ways to approach it, but this is not the way to do it. You are not the grand teacher by saying, well, I'm going to give you $10 instead of $15. You've done nothing. You've just made them more upset and made you look bad. So
100%, 100%. And just to clarify too, because I think sometimes people really just don't understand what's behind the tipping. As you said, the base minimum wage on the federal level is $2.13 an hour. But just to be clear, they call that the tip credit. It doesn't mean that the restaurant owner has the right to underpay their staff. It means that your tips make up the difference between that $2.13 and the minimum wage. Yep. So if the server doesn't make it all the way to that minimum wage, then the owner should have to pay the difference. So you're basically subsidizing their salary. Mm. And when you don't hold up your end of the bargain, in my opinion, you're taking advantage of a system that artificially lowers prices based predicated on the fact that they can have a team of people that's making less than minimum wage. Now, not all states are $2.13 an hour. Many of them have gone up, and some of the states are trying to raise it to a point where it's almost to the minimum wage of those states. So in some cases, like on the West Coast, you have a lot of places where the tip minimum is $15 or $17. So it's not low. But ultimately, like when you're dining out, you're participating in an economy with tipping that, again, all of the menu prices are predicated on the staff that on the fact that the owner is allowed legally to pay a base level wage to front of house employees that is less than minimum.
Adam, we have about a minute and a half or so left. There's something I noticed about this book, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but it seems to be just this nice message about community and treating others as you want to be treated, almost, to make a successful restaurant visit or have a great food experience. Was that at all intentional?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, restaurants are community. You know, the end of the book, the postscript kind of is a little bit of I think a word of warning and a cautionary tale for people to understand. Like, if you want your communities filled with these like vibrant places that are gathering spots for your families and your special occasions, you need to respect that. You know, when I was a kid anyway, and there was like little league teams and things like that, the local restaurants were always the places that were sponsoring the little league teams. I'm sure it's still that way now. They're not sponsored by Chipotle. So like, if you want to have like a community filled with Noodles and Co. and whatever, then, you know, keep spending your money there. But if you want to have those places that are like really have character, that, you know, serve the, you know, types of like regional cuisine that you might find in Wisconsin, you know, some good bratwursts and cheese curds, you better go out there and spend your money at those places, because they're not going to exist anymore. The game is rigged against them right now. So ultimately, we as consumers, we decide what our dining landscape looks like. And it's always a reflection of us and our purchasing habits.
Wow.
Adam Preach. Reiner. Yeah, great stuff.
Amazing.
This has been
That's
really
so good.
Fun and incredibly informative. So thank you so much.
You guys have a candidate for governor that was a former restaurant employee, right? Francesca Hong.
Yes, like, indeed.
If you want to clean up your government, put a restaurant worker in there.
All right.
That's the final message. That's my final answer.
There you go.
That's awesome. Check out The New Rules of Dining Out, folks. A great read and very insightful. Thank you so much for your time tonight, Adam Reiner. Let's do this again sometime.
It was my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
All right. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. We are coming back for The Nightcap on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach here on the Civic Media Network. Always get in touch with us if you can, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on that live stream. We're currently streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform we still call Twitter. Tonight's question is, what is your favorite salad topping in honor of National Crouton Day? And I would say in honor of our conversation with Adam Reiner, too. He was fantastic. If you missed any of the show, folks, go to civicmedia.us/shows. Look for Nightlight. Download episodes. Take them wherever you'd like and catch on up. And as always, you can listen to us. You can get in touch with us via the Civic Media app. If you don't have it, download it today. It's app. Absolutely free. So tomorrow's show, it's going to be a banger, my friends. We're going to be talking to Steve Glynn from Experience Milwaukee. He'll be discussing the misunderstood points of data centers and the tech sector in Wisconsin. And then in the second hour, Oh Mother Glory, it's time to get into the Nightlight Movie Club, where we will be talking about the classic, I would say the godfather of spoof comedy, Airplane. It's going to be great.
It's kind of beyond a classic. A classic Wayne's World or something. But this is an all-time.
It's a textbook. The movie's a textbook, really, when it comes down to it. But we'll be talking more about that tomorrow in the second hour. So please come on back. We'll be here. Same time as always, 5 to 8. Or 5 to 7. Oh, my gosh. I almost made this three-hour show. Oh. But that'll be tomorrow. So please come on by. Stick around. Have fun. And let's get into the nightcap right now. We're going to get to some more of these text messages and Facebook messages about our question of the night and about what's on people's minds. Dom, what is on the text line right now?
We got a few more. We got Nick texting in on WMDX, says homemade croutons are the best. Maple Tree Supper Club has really good croutons croutons, and they seem like they're homemade because my mom made some in the past and they kind of tasted similar. There we go.
Oh, nice.
All right.
There you go. He does homemade. He's the guy that does the homemade bacon bits too. Nick is loving this salad question. I love it.
We have Karen.
He's like, finally a question just for me.
Yeah.
Karen texting in on WAUK. He says smoked salmon and peas with blue cheese crumbles. Oh man. Just get better than that.
Wait, say that one more time. Smoked salmon
and peas with blue cheese crumbles.
I don't hate that. I'm not a big fan of peas, not for any other reason. Why I just feel like they're useless. But
good for you, dude. And are they good fiber? Oh yeah.
Okay. Peas. Cool. Excellent. My mom used to put them in tuna salad when I was a kid. There was always tuna salad. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Just sneaking in there.
And I just want to say thank you to John and Madison listening on WMDX for all the great texts regarding our conversation with Adam. I think that was a great talk. I really, really enjoyed that discussion with him. So, did he have anything else to say? Did we miss anything else?
He said I always overtip no matter what happens. I like to make up for that bad customer that burned my waiter. Okay.
Yeah,
I kind of do too, unless they're completely jerky. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm with John on that one.
I almost always, like, if 20% is like the average, I always give like 25, 30, especially breakfast servers. I always go overboard on breakfast servers because that's a crazy time of day.
And not only that, Greg, but like, especially if your bill is $20 or $16 or whatever, the difference between 20% and 25%, sometimes it's like 75 cents, or whatever. It's just worth it. Take care of people.
What do we got on the Fache book?
We got three more here. Mary Picorni Donlan, my producer at PBS for Director's Cut and the POV and Independent Lens Opens. Love Mary. She says French dressing and then made a puke emoji.
Oh, wow.
So she's laying it out there. She's not in flavor country.
She loves it so much she gets sick. I got it. Got it. Understood. Understood.
Matt Harper in Green Bay, rock rap artist, says hot bacon dressing from Rivers Bend Supper Club. Okay, thank you, Matt. Hope you're well, buddy. We've got a couple more here. Jenny Brand, our Civic Media colleague, says eggs, exclamation point, especially if you swap it for the chicken in a Caesar salad. Okay. And then thank you, Jenny. And then Chris Anderson, my old pal, says gorgonzola. Yeah, ooh. I forgot about gorgonzola.
When the cheese is right, it's great. When the cheese is right, on my Facebook page, we got a few more. My friend Katie says feta. Pickled onions and all olives. All right. Well, that sounds less like a salad than just, those three things. Bill says shredded cheese. Melissa K, our buddy up north and who works for Civic Media, she says cottage cheese. I always put cottage cheese on the side. I don't put it on the salad. I want that separate. Yeah. That's how I say it. excuse me. Nikki says Caesar style. So croutons, Parmesan cheese, Italian dressing. By the way, it's pronounced croutons, but I like saying croutons.
sticking.
If I don't count dressing and have to choose one from the other, I'll go Parmesan. My friend Ryan says, I guess it's croutons. Is that what you want to hear? Croutons? There, I said it.
Whatever, Ryan's, man.
No, Ryan's hilarious. Trust me, he was giggling while he wrote that.
Oh, okay.
Joe says, bacon! With 3 exclamation points.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
Victoria says, bacon, cheese, hard-boiled eggs. That's basically a sandwich at that point. And then Jim says, cukes for cucumbers. So,
oh, yeah, cucumbers.
Thank you so much, everybody. Pete, what'd you learn tonight?
I learned a lot of stuff. That I learned that going out to eat is a process. Mm-hmm. And there's a point in his book where he says it's like this immersive theatrical experience where you're the main character. I mean, he has broken this down, and yeah. It was really fun to talk about that stuff.
I'm going to repeat the name of the book because John out there, John Murray and Madison, in case you want to pick this up, that is the, oh, geez, now I just lost it. What is it called, Pete?
I had it too, and now I threw my questions out. Stand by. The New Rules of Dining Out.
There you go. I think, John, you really enjoyed that book. I hope you get it. I hope you read it. Let us know if you get it. And yeah, we'll work on getting him back on the show. That would be a great After Dark discussion.
Absolutely.
Dom, what did you learn, Mr. Jimmy Caesar?
Real quick, just learned that there's a thing as butter lettuce. I thought that was really cool. Can't go on.
Yes. I got to look that up. Yeah, butter really cool. Lettuce.
Yeah. What did you learn, Greg?
Well, thanks so much for asking, Pete, not Dom. My goodness. I just learned that no matter where you're going to eat, you know, it doesn't have to be a 3-star Michelin restaurant. It can be, you know, a local diner, can be a chain restaurant, but you have to have a certain etiquette attitude, and you need to release your own mind from expectations of what you think you deserve in that experience. Have a good time, tip, and don't be a jerk.
Interesting.
Really good. There you go. Really good. All right, folks, we got to get on out of here, but don't you worry. There's more programming after this program right here. Thank you so much to Dom Tucker, Engineering Traffic, for all the work they do, making sure the microphone's turned on. Everybody who called, texted, got on the live stream. Without you, there is absolutely no us, so we appreciate you being a part of this adventure with us. It's time to get on out of here, but we're going to have a fun time tomorrow. Say goodnight to the people, Pete.
Good night, Wisconsin.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.